We were discussing Muni Sutta, which is available in the Sutta Nipata, and some of the verses we already discussed. Actually, here Buddha gave a very interesting account of information related to himself and about the Arahants. So therefore, this Sutta is in that sense quite profound and explaining the supreme qualities of an Arahant. So one by one we went through, and last time we were discussing how one would abandon all the different kinds of residences, forms. That means how the consciousness does not associate any kind of form, feeling, perception and formations, and how Muni, a saint, is free from greed. So those kinds of things we discussed, and today also we can go to the next verse. The verse going like this: Panya balam sila vatupa pannam samahitam jhanaratam satima sangha pamuttam akhilam anasavam tangvapi dhira munivedayanti. Panyabalang sila vatupapannam samahitam jhanaratam satimam sangha pamuttam akhilam anasavam tangvapi dhira munivedayanti. Now there are certain excellent qualities all highlighted in this single verse. Panyabalang, the wisdom as a power. Then sila vatupapannam, so that means the Muni is equipped with the sila, the morality, the good behavior, and various good observances. And samahitam, so that means his mind is well collected. Jhanaratam, and he delights in jhana, delights in maintaining the mind in a relaxed, heedful position. And satima, so he is quite mindful. Sangha pamutta, so that means his mind is free from various ties. Akhilam, so akhilam means there are no any kind of barrenness in his mind. And anasavan, there are no influxes. Tangvapi dhira muni vedayanti, these are the qualities from which a muni, a saint, could be recognized. Now, we can understand certain qualities are being highlighted here. Actually, we all know that when one is practicing meditation, practicing mindfulness, so various qualities are slowly going to be developed. We may be starting with the simple mindfulness practice, like trying to maintain mindfulness on breathing, try to maintain mindfulness while we are changing the postures, and while we are in a particular posture. While walking, each and every step, we are trying to be mindful. So likewise, we are developing certain qualities. So at the beginning, maybe the mindfulness. But as we are continuing that development, slowly one can understand, okay, certain invitation is there for some amount of effort. Because without an effort, you can't do this practice, because the object what we are trying to maintain is quite difficult, maybe subtle and equanimous. It is not that interested. Unlike, say, we are watching a movie or listening to music, where our special attention is not required. That object itself has a kind of an attractive nature. As a result of that, our mind gets involved there, delighted there. But on the other hand, when we consider a meditation object, a primary object, the kamatahana, so that is where a special effort is needed, otherwise mind get distracted. Easily mind can distracted towards the something interested happened in the past, or what we are trying to do in the future, or maybe something attractive in the present. But if you are maintaining certain amount of effort, purposeful attention, then only probably we can maintain our attention on the desired object, maybe the breath, maybe the step, maybe the posture, maybe rising and falling. So whatever it is, what we have selected as our primary object, So we need certain amount of effort in order to maintain our attention there. Otherwise, mind get distracted. So this effort is another kind of a quality that we automatically start developing. And then as we are continuing the path, now mind start retaining. So free from distractions. For several breaths, now mind can maintain its attention. Say 50 breaths, 100 breaths, 150 breaths. So likewise, the concentration develops. So our attention get collected towards the body. So the body awareness improves. So that indicates even though we start as a simple mindfulness practice, now it, the mind has certain amount of collectedness. And when thus such kind of qualities are available, probably now we can turn into the wise reflection, or wise attention, rather than simply being satisfied with the kind of a tranquil effect coming from our practice. Now we need to investigate what's really going on. Various present moment phenomena are arising, and one can feel them, one can recognize them, and we are investigating each and every phenomena to understand their true nature. So this understanding, this investigation is something that we are target to develop wisdom or vipassana knowledge, insights. So that insights are possible when we have that proper mindset. So we need to have mindfulness, we need to have kind of tranquility, calmness, and we have to maintain that tranquility, mindfulness for a while, pointed to a particular phenomena, and then only we are capable of investigating that phenomena from all different directions so that we get a deeper understanding about its behavior. So that is where the wisdom starts developing. At the beginning, we can't understand what's really going on. We simply wandering around the surface, the superficial information. But later, slowly, mind starts penetrating, going deeper, reflecting wisely, understanding the source, understanding the roots. So likewise, the investigative ability slowly enhancing and the wisdom develops. Now, anyway, we have certain amount of faith, so that's why we are doing it. So all these different, all together, Buddha named them as five faculties: Saddha, Viriya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya. Faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration or collectedness of the mind, and then the wisdom. So these are the certain faculties, that spiritual faculties which are growing. Now here, panya bala means the developed amount of the wisdom faculty. So one may understand, okay, there is a certain amount of wisdom available, but still one may not be able to maintain that for a while because again mind goes and get deluded. But later, as we are further and further improving our vipassana, so one may be able to understand, okay, now I have a kind of a penetrative wisdom. And each and every phenomena I can distinctly recognize, and probably I can understand their true nature, how they are behaving. Now they actually behave by themselves, and we simply start recognizing that, or simply being aware of that process, witnessing that process through that wise reflection, through that wise attention, through that step back observation, investigation. There's a certain amount of wisdom is developing. That's why it is called insight. It's a deep type of knowledge. It is a direct knowledge. It is not kind of a borrowed knowledge. It is not something that we have copied from someone. Rather, it is something that we have developed through proper investigation. So this wisdom is a penetrative wisdom, and it is having a different range. So starting with simply paying attention to different aspects of the phenomena, understanding its different facets, and then maybe understanding its different behaviors. And as we are further investigating, so that behavior slowly become kind of a common thing available with the other phenomena as well. So now we are expanding our understanding. So then actually we get a deeper understanding with regarding the universal characteristics like the impermanence, non-self, suffering, etc. So that wisdom is where profound and most powerful. So that's why here it is highlighted as Panya Balam. Now the wisdom is overpowering. The mind is fairly equipped with wisdom. And sometimes even due to certain reasons, maybe mind again goes and entangled with various mundane type of phenomena, mundane type of activities, conventional activities. But still yogi is not that disturbed because he know he has the confidence, I can quickly recover. I can quickly come back to the penetrative wisdom. So that is where particularly the wisdom power is highlighted. Like the, say, sati bala, the power of mindfulness is highlighted. When the mind become some amount of unmindful, still when the yogi is not being shocked, not being disturbed, because he has the confidence that he can quickly recover, quickly establish mindfulness. So similarly here, panya bala means when the mind sometimes get deluded, still the yogi is not that disturbed because he know quickly come out of how to come out of that, again establish the wisdom, have that proper penetrative type of wisdom, and then he maintain the sila, the morality, so that actually operates as a foundation, and with that foundation now one is building a strong house, something like that, strong building. That foundation is always there. So that's a strong foundation, it's a firm foundation, stable foundation. And while that morality as a foundation is properly established, on top of that foundation now we are building a house, something like that. And then samahitam. So the samadhi, the collectedness actually vary. At the beginning probably we may have a kind of a tranquility, a little bit of blissful nature in the mind. Mind may retain with the object for a while. So slowly one may understand the nature of the samadhi, how mind can maintain its kind of one-pointedness, maintain its concentration. Later, as we are further continuing the practice, particularly when one is in the vipassana practice, it is not that you are watching the same phenomena, but different phenomena. Various phenomena are arising and one has the capacity to quickly locate one's mind onto these new phenomena, and then and there, or to each phenomena, mind properly get concentrated. So that is why it is called Kanika Samadhi, where instantaneous concentration happens as different phenomena are arising. So one is able to maintain one's attention to each different phenomena, and properly it becomes concentrated. Next phenomena happens, again become concentrated. Next phenomena happens, again become concentrated. So the collectedness of the mind is very much retained. It's not that disturbed. Even though different phenomena are arising and they behave in an abrupt manner, still the mind has the capacity to maintain its undisturbed awareness, undisturbed attention, well-focused attention, and that is the Kanika Samadhi, instantaneous concentration that one is maintaining. But later there are some variations, evolutions happen in this area, so the concentration is not kind of fixed thing, rather it also evolves. Now say for example when everything is very much like mixed, like a flux, when that is there, so it is not that you are distinctly recognizing various phenomena, rather you are having a dispassionate look, a dispassionate perspective towards different phenomena. On such situation, the concentration is very much like a pervaded type of concentration. You are simply being aware and the various phenomena are quickly arising and passing away. Everything is very much like mixed. you are fully aware of it and the mind is not disturbed, mind is tranquil. So the concentration is something like that at that level. And later assume that the mind is capable of letting go all the different phenomena and maintaining its own independence, freedom. Such situation, again, mind get collected. Mind has its own clarity. Mind has its own stability. Mind has its own serenity. So that becomes its concentration. Actually, we can't name it as concentration. The word does not match there. Rather, we can call it as samahita or the collectedness. So the mind is well collected, but it is not concentrated or hindered to one particular place. Rather, even without any phenomena, without hooked up with any phenomena, without clung to any phenomena, mind remains stable. Mind remains kind of still. So there the concentration is very much different. So we lose that previous definition. Now one may have a kind of a collectedness of the mind, clarity of the mind, kind of a transparent mind, where our mind is firm, no wavering, no jumping, no going here and there, but being stable. So this is jhana. Now this is where in the terms of the vipassana, one can say maybe the fourth jhana. The early stages are very much like the first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, but when the mind becomes completely free from conditioned phenomena, and entertain or enjoying some sort of freedom without holding to anything, without attaching to anything. So that is the fourth jhana in vipassana, where equanimity is available, relaxed awareness is available. And one may start being delighted with it. One may start appreciating that experience rather than become drowsy, rather than become doubtful. One can simply enjoy that experience because now there is no friction in the mind. There is no any tension in the mind. There is no eye-making, mind-making or conceit available in the mind. Mind is in a very relaxed, very calm, very quiet kind of an atmosphere. So one can start appreciating that. One can start being in it. One may start love that experience. So that is no problem. But later actually one needs to give prominence to understanding more and more defilements and try to maintain the mind free from those defilements, purified one's mind from those defilements. So then that can become one's priority. But time to time, attaining jhana, attaining such a kind of experience, unattached, uninvolved kind of mind state is quite refreshing. So Buddha actually explain it as something like you are taking some food, you are taking your meal. You know that every day we take our breakfast or lunch or dinner. So those are the fixed times that we typically take our meals. So why we take meals is because that we need to nourish our body. It depends on food. So similarly, so when we go through various disturbances during the day, so mind also needs some amount of food to relax, to calm down, to remedy, to become still. So that is where you get into some amount of practice, maybe mindfulness practice, concentration practice, samatha. And here we can pay more attention to vipassana. One is capable of maintaining one's mind free from any attachment. So that is where jhana ratang. So one is now delighted in such kind of an experience. Satimang. Every day, every time, trying to be mindful. Maintaining the relaxed mindfulness. At the beginning, it is very much like deliberately one is developing mindfulness. But later, as one is growing in one's vipassana, so it becomes a natural thing available with you. Even though at the beginning it is difficult and mind is wandering, jumping, many disturbances are there. When one is training one's mind slowly, So mindfulness become fairly consistent, stable. And therefore one can try to be mindful every time, every moment. So then it is a kind of an endowment. One is having that mindfulness every time. It's very much like you are maintaining a monitoring process within oneself. So that mindfulness appear or operate as a kind of an ongoing observing situation within our mind. So monitoring process happening within our mind. It always maybe give you a kind of a direction. Protect you from wrongdoings. And encourage the correct activities. So likewise, it's a self-monitoring process. Satima. That's why even the noble ones say that is the only safety or that is the only protection that they actually maintain. They don't have weapons. They don't have any, say, arms. Rather, what they only have is the mindfulness. So mindfulness becomes one's protector, the safe guardian. And every time if it is available, one is capable of doing the proper thing. And Sangha Pamutta, various kinds of taints or various kinds of ties happening within the mind is abandoned, free from ties. So various bonds are there. So because of the tanha craving, so you may have ties to the household life, may have ties to the various titles, music, etc., etc. So if one's mind is free from ties, that means at that level the mind is free from tanha craving. One may be enjoying a very relaxed kind of awareness, because mind is not attracted to anything. There is no availability of craving at that time. So craving may be temporarily subsided. As a result of that, mind remains calm without any agitation. Akilam. Akilam means there is no any kind of a barren type of attitude in the mind. Rather, mind is refreshed. Here in the book, it is mentioned 5 types of barrenness. Which can happen within the mind. So the 5 types actually are very much the faith related activities with respect to the 3 jewels. Doubt about the Buddha, doubt about the Dhamma, doubt about the Sangha, doubt about the training, and anger with the fellow monastics. So you can apply to your own maybe siblings, your members of the family, or maybe the others available in your office or whatever it is. So whoever you are associating, if you have a lot of doubts, if you are skeptic about what's really going on, so then it is quite uncomfortable within yourself. So it becomes kind of a cheto kila. Cheto, that means a kind of a disturbing experience one may be going through in one's mind. So if you have any doubt about the Buddha, any doubt about the Dhamma, any doubt about the Sangha, and even any doubt about your own sila, so then it is quite uncomfortable. But when you have quite good faith about the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and you understand how good you are maintaining your sila, it giving you a kind of encouragement, it gives you a lot of courage, a lot of confidence. And you feel that the further development is something that you deserve. It is not that that you are looking down yourself. It is not that you are criticizing yourself. Rather, you feel that you deserve a further development, because you are having a lot of faith about the Buddha. You are having a lot of faith about the Dhamma. You are quite confident about the Noble Sangha. And you truly recognize them as your path. Truly recognize them as your role model. Truly recognize them as your refuge, Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. And internally you feel confident. Now you are unwavering. Your faith is unwavering. And your own sila, your own practice is very much the evidence, very much the refuge for yourself. Till you don't have confidence about your own practice, you may start going after various teachers, reading so much of books, because still you don't have much confidence about your own practice. But once you have confidence about your own practice, it is not kind of an overestimation, rather the practice itself is convincing, practice itself is now giving fruits, and your experience is actually quite tallying with the Buddha's teaching and the role models of the Arahant. So you become more and more confident, yes, I am in the correct path. I am doing the best thing. I am doing the correct thing. I am maintaining proper sila. So likewise, you are quite firm now about your own practice. So that is where we can say you are having a firm mind. There is no kind of barrenness in the mind, but rather mind is quite refreshed. Mind has that all the fertilizer, all the kind of freshness, all the kind of awakefulness. It is not type kind of a barren type of mind. Rather, it's a very refreshed mind. It's not something a negative. Rather, mind is quite positive because you are quite confident about your own sila, about your own practice. You have no doubts. So that is where akilam. And then anasavan. So that means all the different latent tendencies are abandoned. Now here we are talking about an arahant. So there are no asavas. So that's why an arahant is called kinasava. All the taints, all the asavas in fluxes are completely uprooted. No more possibility of being victimized to various defilements, because the roots are completely destroyed. So why different defilements are happening is because of the tendencies, latent tendencies our minds are conditioned with. But when one is completely free from all those latent tendencies, taints, so that means one's mind is perfectly free. No more agitation, no more stressful experiences. Because the roots are missing, those agitation factors are missing, unwholesome factors are completely abandoned, uprooted. Akilam anasavam tangvapi dhira muni vedayanti. Now this is how a wise person may understand a saint. Now we can see, actually sometimes people are tempted to measure a person's purity based on his appearance, or based on his miracles, or based on his kind of wishful blessings, particularly about the miracles, how he is behaving, create something, how he is blessing another person, how he is remedying another person. So these are the things sometimes people are using to give prominence to a particular saint. But here you can see Buddha, on the other hand, completely given emphasis onto the spiritual qualities. So those are sublime qualities. Those are not anything related. Anything here is not mentioned about the physical appearance or physical, miracles. Nothing is there. So these qualities are completely the mental spiritual qualities, the wisdom and then the morality. And then he has the collected mind, and he has the potential to be in the jhana, and then always mindful, and again free from any taints, free from any asavas, and free from any entanglements, ties, and he has proper faith about the Buddha Dhamma Sangha and his own practice. And again, he is maintaining a good relationship with others. So that's why in the five mental barrenness, So the fifth one is the anger with one's fellow monastics or one's fellow human beings. Now when you are living in a crowd, in a society, in a group, in a team, are we able to maintain a kind of a good relationship with others? So that is also indicate that one's maturity. So rather than trying to show off, rather than trying to find fault with others, rather than trying to suppress others, command others. So one is having a very good relationship with others, a cordial relationship with others. That indicates one's mentality. So these are the qualities that Buddha highlight to recognize a true saint. So you can see how mature kind of a criteria is given here. And that is where Buddha's teaching is quite interesting, quite profound. There is no place for outer appearance or showing off or one's marketing or something like that. Rather, the true qualities, the true innocent type of sublime qualities are the ones that Buddha has given emphasis. And that is where we need to follow, or that is where the direction is. That is the Buddha representing. And that is the teacher. So that is where we have to move forward as his followers. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Avasarai Bante, we have five questions today.
Right.
The first question is on mindful walking. Dear Venerable Sir, during the walking practice, I focus on my lower body, left and right feet movement, and the sensations on the soles. I can feel the pressure on the soles and how the pressure distributes, hard and soft touches, and also some hot and cold patches on the sole. I can observe the differences between the left foot and the right foot as well. After 10 to 15 minutes of continuous observations, I get distracted to some thoughts. But as per your guidance, I observe this too. The mind comes back and settles slowly. When this happens, I have noticed the earlier hard, soft, cold, cool, warm sensations get mixed up. They become vague and hard to separate. I want to report this and seek advice. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, as we discuss even today, so as we are continuing the practice at the beginning, so the emphasis is there to distinctly recognize all these different qualities, different characteristics. And later, but we may understand, everything become mixed. Now you can't separately understand, separately distinctly recognize each and every phenomena, their characteristics. Rather, everything become very much like mixed, like a flux. So now the dispassion is arising because there is no interest to what you experience. It's difficult to experience something beautiful here because everything is mixed up. Now, actually one ability of the vijnana, the consciousness, is to have distinct characteristics. They are divided and recognizing different phenomena, distinctly recognizing different phenomena. But through the practice, slowly, we are not nourishing consciousness. We are very much like weakening the consciousness, the established consciousness or deluded consciousness. So as a result of that, that distinction, dividing and then recognizing, so that becomes less and less. So as a result of that, everything appear like mixed. Everything appear like flux. And to that flux, you can't love, you can't desire, you can't attract. As a result of that, now the dispassion is available. So to as an answer, I can tell you, okay, just continue your practice. So it's a natural thing. As we are continuing, maybe at the beginning you can, of course, recognize different phenomena, their characteristics. But as we are further moving forward, so all these become kind of mixed up and you feel little, maybe even little lethargic. Or you feel not interested and things are happening very much in a dispassionate level. So that is the evolvement of your practice. That's a important thing, is to continue your practice. Don't give up. Even though the things are not interested, don't give up. Just continue your practice.
Thank you, Bhante. So question number 2 of 5 is mindful sitting. Dear Bante, my question is regarding observing the mind during the sitting practice. Once the breath settles and become very subtle, the thoughts that appear during these times are not related to any of the recent activities. Sometimes I don't see any meaning in them as well. I can look at them as not mine and as a process without my control. However, in the back of my mind, I always wonder where these come from. Is it due to my past karmic actions or some unknown hidden tendencies? Much merits for Bante's explanation. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, it can be any of these. Actually, we can't distinctly recognize whether they are happening due to karma or whether they are happening due to our recent activities. So it can be a mixture of everything. So it is therefore, I mean, we don't have the capacity to understand whether it is exactly happening due to karma, because it is beyond our capacity. But on the other hand, certain obvious situations are available. Like say, for example, before you are sitting, say you had a long conversation with someone. And now during the sitting, what you have discussed probably may come to the mind. So that is quite obvious. Or you had a kind of a influential kind of a discussion, a meeting, a disturbing meeting, or some significant event has happened. Maybe yesterday, day before yesterday. But while you are sitting, even today, it can come to your mind. So those are quite obvious things, because your mind has a significant space given to that incident. So as a result of that, it can be remembered while you are sitting. Other than that, I mean, say as you are continuing, sometimes it is various other thoughts can happen, various signs can happen, but you can't understand the exact reason why they are happening, but they are happening. So our duty is to simply allow them to come, allow them to be, and allow them to go. So we don't have much preference, rather we simply observe how they are coming and how they are going. We are not trying to suppress them, and we are not promoting them, we are not deluded by them. Rather we are maintaining proper attention, awareness to them. As a result of that, they start passing away.
Thank you, Bante. So question number 3 of 5 is a general question. Dear Bante, can you explain the verse Sankappa Rago Purisassa Kamo? Does that mean all these relationships we have, love and attraction to the opposite sex, are all based on a fabricated mind-made illusion? Thank you, Bante. That's
Yeah, we can say so. Yeah, we can say so, because, I mean, Nate Kamayani Chitrani Loke Sankappa Rago Purisassa Kamo. So that's the statement Buddha made in the Nibbedika Sutta, very interesting verse. So, Nate Kamayani Chitrani Loke. So, the beautiful things available in this world are not the real karma, are not the real sense pleasures. But, Sankappa Rago Purisassa Kamo. But the kind of fabricated thoughts, fabricated desires, projected desires, wishes, expectations. So those are the ones actually ambitious. When one becomes ambitious, one becomes more attracted, one becomes more deluded, one becomes very much like driven by. Beautiful things may be available, but they themselves are not the problem. Then actually the Arahants, Buddha also may have the problem, because beautiful things are still available. So the answer, the remedy, the solution is next given. Tithani chitrani tatheva loke atitha dhira vinayanti chanda. So while all these beautiful things are keeping as it is in the world, so the wise person is restraining one's desires, restraining one's craving, or abandoning one's craving. So when the craving is abandoned, it doesn't matter the things are beautiful. It doesn't matter that the surrounding is beautiful, attractive, but you don't have a desire. You don't have a craving. So as a result of that, you are not disturbed. So therefore, it's a very interesting verse. giving us a different direction or giving us a different dimension in our practice, it doesn't mean that we immediately can come to this understanding or we can immediately start practicing according to this line. So we need certain amount of morality at the beginning and certain amount of particularly the sense restraint. So when things are very, very beautiful, if we are constantly going and attracted to by them and start watching movies and etc., etc., and constantly using our senses to entertain, to gratify senses, so that means so we can't develop. So we need certain amount of restrainment in our practice. We need to protect, guard our senses. Later, when we are developed, when we are continuing our practice, so the wisdom takes over, and as a result of that, even though beautiful things are there, and even though we are not maintaining much of restricted type of restrainment, still mind is not interested. So that's the beauty of the practice. So at the beginning, if we are not restrained and if we are not maintaining proper conduct, so then we become quite bewildered by various sensual thoughts because we couldn't maintain our faculties properly. We didn't guard our faculties. But later, since the mindfulness practice, the wisdom practice, the vipassana practice has taken over, so even one can look at beautiful things, still mind remains calm. Mind is not getting deluded. Mind does not get contaminated, overwhelmed by those sights. So that means the sankapparaga is not there. The desires are not there. The craving is not operative in one's mind. So even the outside is beautiful, you are not disturbed. Even you are eating a delicious food, you are not being attracted. You are not being deluded. Even though music is available, your mind remains calm. So likewise, so this is a kind of a mature level which is explained in the verse.
Bhante, so question number 4 of 5, it's again a general question. Dear Bhante, after practicing several years and also from your teachings, I understand that there can be two aspects we are developing in the practice. First one is the qualities of mindfulness, clear comprehension, concentration, etc. And the other is understanding our hindrances, influxes and hidden tendencies. Since the latter is associated with our keles, is much more harder and bigger problem to deal with than developing the qualities. How much you practice and develop Dhamma, there seems to be times when everything gets flushed away within a few seconds and we get a blow to the right spot. I doubt that this is not going to be sorted even if we enter monastic life, which can be only a deviation from the underlying problem. How can one expose these critical keles, deal and understand them? Much thanks for Bhante's valuable insights.
Yeah, very interesting question. So as you mentioned, either you are a layperson or a monastic, so the diminishing of defilements is quite slow. But as a monastic, there may be certain conducive qualities, conducive environment more suitable for that process. So for example, if you are living in a forest, if the environment is not agitating, if the environment is not that influential, if the surrounding is giving you a very peaceful environment, if the mind is, the environment is not provocating you, that means you are maintaining that calmness, relaxed awareness, unattached awareness for a long time. So your mind becomes more and more stable, more and more free from defilements for a long time. But on the other hand, when one is maintaining a lay life, so you are associating more kind of attractive things and many agitating factors are available, attractive things are available, more disturbances are available. So likewise, the mind is easily get agitated. Mind easily get attracted, easily get defiled. So that's the disadvantage in the lay life in that sense. But on the other hand, even though you are a monastic, if you are not properly practicing, and while being in the monastery, say you are connected with the internet and enjoying the outside or talking to others and listening to music and reading the papers, etc., etc., still then not going to be helpful. Anyway, the process is extremely slow, so that's the examples indicate. Say, for example, Buddha say how slow the process is by giving very interesting examples. One example is that changing of the handle of the axe. Say one is using an axe to cut trees, and that is his job. So every day he is using an axe to cut trees. But say after several years, he has noticed the handle of the axe has completely worn out. Now he need to fix a new handle. But you can't understand per day how much the handle has worn out. It's a very small amount or negligible amount it has worn out during a particular day. But after several years, one may understand, okay, it's completely worn out, you can't now use it further. So that understanding is significant, then only he may change the axe handle. So similarly, Buddha mentioned, per day, because of your practice, how much defilements have faded away, how much defilements have weakened, is difficult to measure. But when you compare to your mind's quality, maybe 6 years, 6 months ago, 1 year ago, and today, where it stands, then there may be a significant change, significant difference. And that is the way that you need to understand, okay, there is a progress. There is a fading off happen. There is a letting go process happen. Mind become more and more purified. Mind become more and more cleansed. Previously, suppose you get many agitations, many desires, too much talking. But now say you have less inner chatter, less defilements, less agitation. Your mind become more stable. So those are the indicators explaining or telling you, indicating you that you are progressing.
Thank you, Bhante. So this question number 5 is the last question, and it's a general question. Dear sir, recently I have heard the Four Noble Truths defined in such a way that Dukkha Satya as seeing how the works of mind create suffering, Samudaya Satya as underlying craving and attachments as the reason for such behavior, Nirodha as realizing the nature of non-attached mind, Marga as the Eightfold Path that enables achieving such status. Can you advise if my understanding is correct that we can summarize the whole practice around the way how the mind works with metta? That's the end of the question.
Yeah. Can you repeat the first satya, Chamila?
Dukkha Satya as seeing how the works of mind create suffering.
Mm-hmm. Actually, we can accept, I mean, your understanding is correct. So, Dukkha, I mean, it's a more even broader. So, not only the mind, so even the body and all the different physical phenomena, everything is very much like going through some sort of an agitation, going through some sort of an unsatisfactoriness. So, it's constant change is available. So that is also suffering. So therefore, the suffering, the noble truth of suffering is so vast in that sense. So it is true that you can recognize suffering available in your mind. So that is what we can immediately recognize. But more than that, further suffering is available. And that is where the dukkha is sometimes categorized into three groups. Dukkha Dukkha, Viparinama Dukkha, Sankhara Dukkha. Dukkha Dukkha is where, suppose you are going through certain illnesses. So your body is ill. It is going through a disease. So you are suffering. So that is unavoidable. So likewise, certain amount of unavoidable kind of physical pains, physical discomfort, those are available, so that is coming under the dukkha dukkha. And then the viparinama dukkha, that is where, suppose you are going through aging process, you become older, and the things are also changing, things are become worn out. So likewise, so there is a certain amount of friction, there is a certain amount of discomfort coming because of this changing nature. So that is another side of suffering. And on the other hand, the last one is the sankhara dukkha, where we create suffering. Because of our mental formations, as you mentioned, because of our works of the mind, and we prepare suffering or we create suffering. We unnecessarily fabricate suffering. So that is something that we can completely take out through the practice. So that is where the Buddha's complete, I mean, a kind of an answer is given, where we can completely be free from that sankhara dukkha, that we can maintain a very purified mind, an unfabricated mind, unproliferated mind. So then you are free from that sankhara dukkha. So everything else seems quite correct, apart from the first suffering, where it has a further broader meaning.
Just got another question, Bhante. So it's question number 6. It's a general question. Bhante, is nama rupa in the dependent origination the same as the 5 aggregates? Thank you. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. Actually, when it comes to nama rupa, so those are typically vinyana paccaya nama rupa, nama rupa paccaya salayatana, all those areas are fairly mental. And the name and form, nama rupa mentioned there, nama represents vedana sanya chetana pasa manasikara, feeling, perceptions or signs, then the volition, contact and the attention. So they are very much the most primary components of our mind. And other than that, the rupa. So rupa deha is the very much the extract of the physical side or the shadow of the physical side. It is not the real physical side meant there. We can say it's as the rupa sanya. So assume that you have experienced a kind of contact with someone. Say you hold hand with someone. Hugging a person. So that's a physical contact. That is a kind of a gross experience. But later, probably you can remember that experience, and there is a kind of a feeling attached to that. There's a kind of perception attached to that. There's a kind of an intention attached to that. Your mind has attended to that. So likewise, these are the name and form coming from that. So the form in that level, at the latter level, is very much the sanya you are having with respect to that previous experience. Previous experience is a gross physical experience, but now you are in a mental world where certain extracts of that physical world, physical experience is again experiencing, again operating in your mind. So that therefore we can say, at that time, name and form is very much mental, and it has certain link to that previous physical experience, but it is different. Okay.
So that was the last question in the Google form. We have about 5 minutes, but is it okay to open for questions?
Sure, sure. Yeah.
So if someone wants to ask a question from Bhante, you can raise hand and I will unmute you. You can post any questions directly to Bhante. So we have one person who has raised the hand.
Right.
Thank you, Bhante. I just want to get some clarification in the last question about Nama Rupa and the difference between that and the five Panchaskanda. That's the same as the five aggregates, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Is that so? The five Panchaskanda, the five aggregates, is that? Did Bhante say that it's in the mind, or is that the contact, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, attention?
Mm-hmm.
When
we consider the five aggregates, so the Rupakkhanda indicates the complete physical world. So it may be gross, it may be subtle, it may be far, it may be near, past, future, present. So all these are included in the Rupakkhanda. So that is very physical. But on the other hand, when we are talking the Vijnana Paccaya Nama Rupan, Nama Rupaccaya Salayatanam, so that is where how mind is going through that grasping process, the conditioned process. So how one mind state dependent on another mind state. How one state of mind depend on another mind state. So likewise, when we are defining that, so the more emphasis is very much into the mental side. So how ignorance operating within the mind is conditioning more formations in the mind, fabrications in the mind. So then how that fabrications promoting establishment of consciousness, conditioned consciousness, how the kind of a consciousness which is having kind of a motivation coming from those formations. And that consciousness is now entangled in name and form. So that name and form is very mental. It has certain very subtle attributes coming from aggregates. See, it has a very shadow coming from the physical aggregate, the form aggregate. Very subtle feeling, subtle sign. Chetana, the volition, likewise. And after having that kind of an entanglement between consciousness and name and form, now it is giving a momentum to the operation of other six senses, salayatana. Now they are coming to more gross level. Now you are opening your eyes. Now you start talking. Say you are start walking. Start touching. So likewise, now you start more operating into the physical world, interacting with the physical world. Now salayatana paccaya passo. Now you are in contact with the outside world. And it generates more feelings, which is gross. Previously, what we have experienced is a very subtle form of feeling. But here, the contact causes a gross form of feeling. And now it is generating a gross kind of attachment, a certain kind of a tanha, craving. Now the mind get grasped into that experience. So the upadana happens. So more and more, now the suffering is available. So at the beginning, at the early stage of this whole chain is very, very subtle. But as you are going forward, so that experience become gross. So that is how I think we need to understand.
Thank you, Bhante. And that's a clear expert. Thank you, Sadhu.
Okay.
So just have one more minute. If anyone has a quick question, we can take it. Just unmute you. There's one more question.
Dear Bhante, this question is about the vibrations happening when we are walking or sitting. Sometimes I hear that in Dhammadesana that these vibrations are like sanskara and the sanskara should be sort of thought as negative and should should not be entertained and should be kept away. And the other is to let them happen and to experience and learn. So these are two different approaches in dealing with the vibrations. So I would like to ask Bhante's kind advice on this, how to deal with the vibrations that occur during the walking and sitting.
It's a matter of simply observing them. So, I mean, vibrations may be happening due to various causes, and we are simply observing them without fabricating, without generating anything on top of that. So, for example, if there is a vibration on your knee, maybe it may be manifest as a vibration, it may be you can talk it as a pain, whatever it is. But if you are capable of keeping it only the level of vibration, that means we are not fabricating on top of that vibration. We are not adding anything onto that. We are not adding our own likes and dislikes onto the picture, onto the experience. We are trying to keep the experience as it is. And we are very much like able to come out of the experience and observe the experience. Now in the Satipatthana practice, it's one interesting way of looking at it. Now say, in-breath and out-breath happens. So the breathing experience happened. So now we know how simply to experience it. How to come out of that and experience it. Or how to come out of that and witness it. We are not disturbing it. We are not thinking breathing is interesting or breathing is boring or something like that. We are not talking about it. We are not having any type of preferences about it. Rather, we maintain a very open, unbiased attitude about that experience. So similarly here also, vibrations are happening. It's a matter of observing that, keeping a wise attention onto that, without adding our own likes and dislikes into the picture. So then we are not fabricating it. We are not making anything out of that. But through the observation, certain insights are generating, certain knowledges are generating, some understanding is generating within ourselves. So, sankharas themselves, yes, they are impermanent, so they may show their impermanent nature. And they are constantly arising and passing away, so they may show their true nature. And again, they are constantly go through that arising and passing away process. So they are oppressed by that process. Therefore, they are showing their unsatisfactory nature, their suffering nature. But we as an observer simply observe it, investigate it as an outsider, as a witness, as an observer, neutral observer.
Yeah, thank you, Bhante. I think my confusion came after listening to one Dhamma Desana on Mahasalayatanika Sutta, I think recently I listened to it, and it was about this Nadi Vaseti Pajahati Vinodeti, that kind of view of not entertaining what is coming through these six organs. So I think that's where the confusion came.
I need to refer the statement in the sutta. So they are now say, if there is a beautiful sight. Now, as we already discussed, sometimes our mind, because of our own available raga, dosa, moha, lust, hatred and delusion, since the sight is beautiful, we may get attracted to that. We may naturally get attracted to that. We may naturally get agitated by that. Naturally get defiled by that. So that is because of our own latent tendencies. But if we are more advanced, if we are more developed, even though the sight is beautiful, so we are not being attracted, we are not being agitated. Rather, we are able to maintain a kind of a quiet experience, maintain kind of a undisturbed kind of experience. So in that level, we can promote telling, okay, don't go and adhere to that experience. Don't go and attach with that experience, with that sight. Don't go and adhere to that sight. don't get attracted, don't cling to that, don't grasp that. So likewise, we can sort of promote our practice. Just keep your experience mere to that seeing. Seeing is just seeing. Nitya ditta mattam bhavisati.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. Maybe it's two different levels of applying. One may be when you're meditating, like sitting and walking, maybe just let them come and pass away. And if it is something like more gross, like happening in day-to-day life, so maybe apply that second method.
Maybe, yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Sadhu.
So we've gone a little bit over time now. I think we'll end the program for today. Just before we end, I think I'll just make a few announcements because there are a few new participants today. So as we've indicated before, Bhante is doing a tour of Australia in April between the Easter break and Anzac Day. So we will be sending more information regarding the places and times and all of that, and we will you'll be able to join via Zoom anyway to all the sessions. So we will be sending the information through on this mindfulnessforyoungadults@gmail.com, that email. I'll just post it into the chat window now. So if anyone is not in that group, the email group, please drop us a note on there, and we will add you to the group so that you can get those notifications. And so we to end the program, I would like to thank Bhante for his valuable time. Also share the merits with the organizers and all beings, both seen and unseen, who enable this program. I would also like to thank and pass merits to the participants for joining the program today and for practicing and also sharing their questions. Teruvan Saranai. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Yeah, Teruvan Saranai.